passage that we're going to get into is sort of loquacious of the creation of the world and the story of Adam and Adam in Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden, and everything that ensues. Very, very deep topic. There's a lot to talk about, and hopefully we'll be able to scratch the surface. To get started, I'd like to start with a harass. Harass is going to help us kind of frame the discussion that we're going to hopefully have here for some time. Rashi, the first Rashi on the entire Torah. And Rashi says the following. Om Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Yehoshua said, He says, according to Tzal, the Torah really should have started from Hachodesh Hazalachem. It should have started from the middle of Parsha Bo, where it has the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh. Chodesh is Elohim. He missed Rishon in the Sahu Bar Yisrael, because that is the first mitzvah that the Jewish people received. Right, up until that point, the Torah is mostly stories. And when you get there, you really get to the meat and potatoes of the mitzvahs and the Averos, and what Hashem is telling us to do and not to do. So Rashi, that is where the Torah, it would seem, should have started from. What is the reason that it started off with Bereshit? Why did it start off with the start of Torah? Mishum Koach Maisav He Gid La'amo, because in Rashi quotes the Pasuk in Tehillim, that Hashem told his nation the power of his action, but Seish Lahem Nachlas Goyim, in order to give him, in order to give his nation the inheritance of nations. What does that mean? In Yom Rimos Olam, if the nations of the world will say to yourself, will say to Jewish people, listen Hashem, you see, because you conquered the land of seven nations. He's referring to the fact that the Jewish people invaded the land of Canaan and took it over. It's called the land of seven nations because there were seven Canaan nations. You see. The conqueror. So the Jewish people respond to the nations. Kol ha'aretz shel Kodesh Baruch Hu, the entire world belongs to Hashem, who bara, who created it, unishana la'asher yasha be'inah. And he gave it to whom he wanted. Unishana nishana lahem. When he wanted, he gave it to the Canaanites, to the Canaanim. And when he wanted, he took it from them and he gave it to us. Says Rashi that the reason that the Torah had to start with the story of Bereshit, the story of creation, is in order that you should be able to say, Hashem created the world, Hashem gives the land to whom he wants, and therefore the nations have no claim against us for taking the land of the seven nations, because that was Hashem's decision. Now, it's a very interesting question, and very interesting answer. I mean, gracious, first of all, why should the Torah start from the mitzvah? Why is Rashi saying the Torah should have started from Rosh Chodesh? Why couldn't it start from here? That's just, you know, just on the surface. What is Rashi even asking to begin with? And furthermore, I mean, this part of the Torah is very central. It's the whole story of, first of all, telling us that Hashem created the world, of the fundamentals of our faith, of our belief, of our theology, and everything, and telling us about the stories of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and everything that leads up to us being who we are, and how Hashem choosing new people, which sets the stage for everything. So, you know, how could you skip that? Why would you think to skip that? And the answer is an interesting answer, because of that one thing that maybe the nations will say that we sold their land, so that's the reason? I mean, first of all, if that's the reason, so why doesn't you have the entire book of Bereshit? Why don't you just have the book of creation? Right? Tell us the first part of Bereshit, seventh planet of the world. Stop there. Go to my question, tell us, and go to it. Fair question? Saturday. Forum is all, you know, open forum. Feel free to speak up, ask questions, comments, complaints, whatever. It's all good. So the Maharal.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard Maharal, but I can't.
Rabbi Yehuda. I'm right here, exactly. We're all talking. You hear the hula lay? Love, okay. Very pivotal character. He's a form of the foundations of much of what we now today have as Jewish thought. And he has an entire commentary dedicated just to Rashi. And he says that what the question, Rashi's question is, that the Torah is called, why is it called the Torah? What is the word Torah? Oh. Right, Torah is, that's another word, Moreh, right? To teach. It's a teaching. It's guiding, showing you the way. So that's the law, it's a mystery. Right? So, it could be that the rest of it's important, right? But the Torah should have started with, should be the mystery. Okay, so maybe have the Torah and have a separate book, have something else that tells all these important stories. Right? But why does the Torah have to start with that thing? So, question then becomes, what's the end? Right? So if the question is, just, okay, this book that we're reading here that contains all the mitzvot, this book should have started with just be a mitzvot, right? So and maybe tell me the rest elsewhere. What's the answer? Halachi said, because the Hashem wanted us to know that He created the world, so we tell the garden that, you know, sorry, Hashem took it, He gave it to you, and He created it, He gave it to you, He gave it to us, that's His choice. So, okay, but tell us somewhere else. Why does it have to be in the same book? So, in order to answer that, let's diverge for a minute. On Shabbos. Okay, we saw this. They did it. And we say that Shabbos is two things. The Zecher is to remember two things. The Zecher, the Maisa B'Reishis, it's to remember the creation, and it's also Zecher with Tiyas Mishraim. It's Zecher to remember that we lucky. So what's the difference? What's the similar? What are these two things? My sagacious creation and leaving. Let's start like this. What's the difference between them? They're both great acts of God and both huge and same rapper.
One shows an attempt to create the world, so it says He has ownership of it, but then the Jesse Thryan shows that Hashem continues to engage in the world, continues to control it, even after it was created.
Daida. So, I'll tell you something. So say to this Friday night, mm-hmm. right? Just try and say it by heart. Feel a little confusing.
Hmm?
Feel a little confusing, say it by heart. You ever try it? Why? We start off, I check the Shabbat, the Shabbat, the Shabbat, the Shabbat, and then a couple of lines later, you tell him I said righteous, right, easy getting mixed up. Looking for it. Okay? I'll just read a little bit closer. If you remember this, it'll be easier to actually place this one goes there. There's an interesting dynamic when you read it. Okay, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. Baruch Atah Hashem, created the world, God, created the king of the world. I said, Shidishanu b'mitzvosho v'rachavanu, whom he sanctified us with his mitzvot, and he desired us. B'shabbas karto b'yahava v'radon him chilvanu, and he, and in his Shabbos, with love and with desire, with favor, he bequeathed to us the Zikar on the Maase basis, as you remember, the creation. If you don't see the Creator, it's withdrawing, because it is the first of the holy days, the remembrance of the Jesus Zion. Okay, so up until now, everything has been third person. He sanctified us as his mitzvot, and he desired us and gave us his Shabbos. He gave us, he bequeathed us the Shabbos. Then we say, Kivanu v'chaita, because you have chosen us, so sonu kidasha, and you have sanctified us, Nikol Ha'anim, from all the nations, the Shabbos katzicha, and your Shabbos. Yehava v'sam kinchal panu. With love and with favor, you have this Shabbos. So all of a sudden, we switch from third person to second person. What's that about? So if you look at where this switch happens, in the beginning, up until Zecher HaMaaseh Bereishis, to remember the creation, it's all third person.
Mm-hmm.
Once you said that is to remember Mitzrayim, to remember Egypt, then you get the second person.
Just when Hashem took us to become his people.
Exactly. Because it's the same idea also, that's probably that. Why is it that when Hashem gave us the Torah, and he tells us, I'm God, right? Anoki, Hashem Elokecha, Asher, Baruch Hashem Shemayim V'Haaretz, right? That's what he's saying. Is that what we say, right? He doesn't say, I'm God who created the heavens and the earth. Because I'm your God, I share. I brought you out of Egypt. Because gracious is impersonal. It's, nobody was there, right? It was not for any specific person. It was generic. It was for everybody. It was for mankind. There's only one person at the time. But it was for mankind in general. Mitzrayim shows, as you said, he still cares. He's still involved. He cares about us. That was for us. So he's our God. Okay. So why am I telling you? So there's another piece of this. The other piece of this is that when Hashem takes us out of Mitzrayim, suddenly Hashem starts to do what we call open miracles, right? And showing us that he's still involved and he still controls the world and it's all his, we start having what we call open miracles, right? It's only in the Sefer Shemot Hashem says to Moshe that I am Hashem. Right? I never, Hashem says that I appear to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, by name Hashem, I never showed to them. The question is, Hashem does refer to himself as Hashem among the when he speaks to the others, the forefathers. The question they mean is the name of Hashem, Yod-Kei, Vav-Kei, is the name of Hashem that's outside of nature. And to the others, Hashem always acted within nature. Now there were miracles that were pretty direct, pretty obvious, but it was nothing that was completely outside of the realm of nature. It might have been stretching nature, like, you know, a 9-year-old woman giving birth, right?
Mm-hmm. Or stretching it for them.
Yeah, that's a good question. That wasn't so much for the other, right? That's a good question. But in general, you know, in spite of that, the Hashem of Sefer Bereishis is Hashem which is within me. And similarly, the Hashem that he has in the very beginning, right, as much as the creation of the world is as awesome and godly as you can get, and you might say, hey, you know, God is making things out of nothing, right? That's pretty supernatural, right? By the other hand, he's creating nature.
Right?
What he's doing is he's creating nature. So what the Sefer of Bereishis really is the Sefer where Hashem is within nature. And what Rashi's telling us, what's he telling us about the conquest of Eretz Yisrael? So, again, what is the difference between Hashem's involvement in taking us out of Mitzrayim, taking us out of Egypt, the battle, if you will, against Egypt, versus the battle against the Canaanites? So by and large, the difference is, while not universal, but by and large, the difference was that the wars that we fought in Eretz Canaan, in Eretz Yisrael, to capture it, were wars that we fought with physical, natural means, with swords and with arrows, and with spears, and Hashem helped us. Hashem had us win, not always, because there were times we lost, right? And there were miracles. The beginning was very miraculous, right? The conquest of Jericho, was highly miraculous, where they surrounded the city and the walls just fell, you know, just something in the ground. Or the battle against, the second battle against Ai, where it was, you know, meteorites, you know, whatever it was, rocks coming out of the heavens, and but for the most part, the rest of it, the most part, the conquest of Eretz Canaan is Hashem within nature. And when you have Hashem, you have Jewish people against the Midianites, against the Egyptians, nobody complains. Because, okay, we get it, right? That was God, right? God did that. But when it comes to our fight against the Canaanites, our conquest of Canaan, the nations could say, what are you doing? We don't see God here. This is you. You want to know how I know it's you? Because there is God. Who's you fighting? Who's you fighting? The answer from Bereishis is more than simply, well, it's God's world, and he can do what he wants. That God doesn't have to act with open miracles, with, you know, seed turning into blood, and with fire, with hail coming down from the sky, in order for Hashem to intervene to be an act of God. What we see from the story of, you know, gracious proper, the creation of the world, and further through the entire Sefer of gracious, is that Hashem has another method, another mode Hashem, he created nature, and he works within that nature. He can control that nature as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that nature is as much an act of God as anything else. So the one of the major themes that we're going to probably be focusing on throughout Sefer Bereishis is this idea. Hashem, seeing Hashem within nature, seeing Hashem within the everyday of the world, and not needing necessarily to have to go to be openly miraculous to see Hashem. And Chazal tell us that in a certain, from a certain perspective, that's the ultimate. That's the preferred way. That, you know, the Gemara tells a story, an incredible story about a man who wife, you know, she passed away, and they had a small baby, and, you know, whatever person had, Hashem changed the anatomy of the father. He was able to feed the baby. He was able to nurse the baby. So one of the Amorayim, the Talmud, he said that, wow, you know, how great this person must be. Hashem changed all of nature for him. Another Amorayim said, you know, how disgraceful it is. Hashem had to change nature for this person. So, both are true. Obviously, if Hashem decides to change nature for a person, you know, a person that doesn't have great merits, and that's certainly an amazing thing to see, and it's you know, ultimately, when Hashem does want to reveal himself to the world once and for all in the Messiah, he does it in that way. On the other hand, the other perspective, which is that Hashem created nature for a purpose. Hashem wants the world to run in a certain way. Nature is a system he created, and it's preferable to stay that way. And it's preferable if a person can break through the blinder that nature sometimes is, and can see Hashem within that. That's what Hashem tells Moshe of Amos. You know, Moshe complains to Hashem. He says, it was after Hashem told Moshe to take the people out of the shrine, and you can go to Paro and tell him I'm taking them out, and he does, and Paro makes it work. And Moshe says, like, hey, why, you know, why did you put them here? Come on, Hashem. Please have a seat. No problem. What's your name?
Joseph.
Nice to meet you.
My pleasure.
We haven't started the cooking yet.
Right?
It's from the beginning, and we're not only the beginning, but we're introducing the beginning. So, we're in the middle. Don't leave without throwing one of these out.
No, I will. Yeah, I told him yesterday too.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting, because in a way, the whole reason that the Jewish people went down to Mitzrayim in the first place and became a slave, and Hashem had to bring them out to Mitzrayim, was because Avraham Avinu asked a question when Hashem said, you know, I'm going to give you a son, and
so just that's a very, very good point. Just to give you a 2 seconds catching up. I'm just giving an introduction to Bereishis, and the theme, one of the big themes that we're going to be hopefully talking about, that Bereishis really captures for us, is seeing Hashem within nature. In the world. Bereishis, the story of the creation itself, of Hashem's creation of nature,
mm-hmm.
and is and yeah, the rest of the of races is where we see Hashem. For Hashem, we have the prophecy and we do have a miracle, but there are miracles that by and large are within are within the realm of nature. Within the realm of nature, perhaps touching nature, but nothing that's overtly open, like an Osirian, like that's the template. That's one of the things. So, right? Mm-hmm. It's pointing out that it's interesting that Mitzrayim is the place where we do have Hashem perform very open miracles, and according to what Chazal say, the reason that we went down there. One of the reasons we went down to Mitzrayim is because Abraham simply understood, questioned Hashem when he said that he was going to give him a son. He was going to give him a son, which seemed like a very difficult thing, you know, considering his and Sarah's old age. So it would be very fitting, right, if that causes that spirals into his children going down, and yes, having to have Hashem be revealed to them in a very open way to say, like, hey, you know, I'm here, and that perhaps, right, that, you know, it was some kind of a failing to see Hashem in completely in nature. Now we have to see it in my open way. That's very nice, very good, thank you. Now, at the same time, by and large, what Hashem says to Moshe in Shmos is that the Avos, perhaps this was a small, you know, fraction of this, but the Avos did not require such things. Hashem says to Moshe, you know, the Avos, Yitzchak and Yaakov, I made them promises that they didn't even see fulfilled. Right? I promised them the land of Israel, but they never saw it happen. And they never questioned it. Right? They never saw, and they never saw open miracles. But they, nevertheless, they didn't have to. So that's the secret. That's what we're going to focus on. And the reason it has to be here in the Torah is because it is instructive. Right? We asked before, Rashi asked, who we started with, why the whole thing of Bereishis exists. The Torah is the Torah. Torah means Torah, it's teaching. It's the book that, by and large, its purpose is to teach us the laws, the mitzvot. So what is it doing starting with Bereishis? Let it start with the mitzvah verse Chodesh, Rashi says, which is the first mitzvah, the first real section of the Torah that contains it. Rashi answers that, well, the nations of the world are going to say that the Jewish people are thieves. They took over the land of Canaan. They went and stole from them. And we'll respond to them that no. Look at the Torah. It says Hashem created the world. That makes it his. He gave it to the Canaanim when he wanted them to have it. And when he wanted it, he took it away and gave it to us. It's his world and it's his prerogative. So the question is, okay, we're discussing exactly what Rashi is asking. So what we said was, from the Maharal, I was proud that this is what we just discussed. So the Torah is Torah, is teaching, and therefore it shouldn't tell a story. The stories may be important, but tell us elsewhere. I believe the answer, based on, I mentioned before, a lot of what I'm saying is quoting from Moshe Howard in Baltimore. Is that with him?
Good question.
And what he said was, is that based on everything we're saying, that these stories, and this is true no matter how, you know, no matter how you explain this Rashi or how you understand the purpose of Bereishis, but it's, nothing in the Torah is simply a history lesson. The Torah is not meant to teach us history. The Torah is meant to tell us things that are important for our faith. They're important for that we have to know as Jews. And this section of the Torah is extremely important, and that it is teaching. It is Torah. It is Torah. It's not teaching us, you know, to be kosher and put on tzitzit, but it's teaching us the fundamentals of our belief, of our faith, and, you know, in keeping with the theme that we've been saying, is teaching us about how we can see Hashem within the world, and how we're supposed to see Hashem in the world, and we see Hashem in every day, in every part of our life. Okay. With that, and as I mentioned before you came, questions and comments are welcome and appreciated. So if you have anything to contribute to that, please feel free.
Yeah, just one thing. When they talk about Mother Nature, so to speak, essentially a ceremony. It's Mother Nature, so to speak. Because you hear people say, no, it's not Hashem, he came from Mother Nature. But then the question is, what is Mother Nature? And then we come back in a circle. Hashem is actually, excuse me, Mother Nature.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the interesting things that was once pointed out to me about, you know, atheism. Is that it's really its own religion.
I'm sure.
It's really its own religion.
Right.
It's a belief system as well, right? It's not just, you know, what you would call, you know, like they like to present it perhaps as being, you know, sure, you know, it's logic and it's what you would conclude. You know, it has its own belief that they have to insert as well to explain the inexplicable. So, yeah, things like, right, you know, attributing things to, you know, an invisible Mother Nature, you know, I know they don't really mean that there's a mother out there, but the idea of Mother Nature being that, you know, let's say evolution, right? So, or even the entire formation of the world and the universe, that is clearly, you know, on a path somewhere, right? You know, leaving aside the debate about, you know, whether there was an evolution, but you know, let's say there was, but to say that there was without any kind of guiding force is extremely difficult. Because, you know,
well, the chemicals that come together.
Exactly.
So why did it divide them lonely?
Right, exactly. And like, you know, I don't know. All the things, like, you know, birds developed wings, why? Because they had to get them. So, okay, so like, how did the cells, like, figure out that if you would, you know, make bones in a certain geometry with feathers or whatever, that it's going to be able to fly, right? So, okay, so good. So there is evidence, it happened, fun. Look at, it happened, I'm very happy, it's fine. But to say it happened by itself, to me, you know, it's very difficult. So that's Mother Nature, is just, you know, okay, nature wants to go somewhere, right? I was recently studying for a biology class. So, granted, it's a very small, like, couple lines of what I read, and I might not be getting the full picture of what's being said, but what I read was that you have something in nature among animals called altruism. Altruism. Okay? So, you know, among humans, altruism means that you do something, you know, because it's right, right? Unselfish. So you find amongst animals, the animals will sometimes, for no seeming benefit of their own, or perhaps even sometimes to their detriment, will do something for the for the good of the cloud, for the good of everybody, for the good of the community that they live in, for a child. Animals will sometimes do something for another animal, even if it doesn't seem to help it, or even if it might hurt it. So what did it say? That ants, you find that ants, they take care of each other's larvae, right? Each other's children, right? They take care of the colony of children, right? They're very good about that. And they explain, they explain in general, in this idea of altruism, right? Because it's bothersome, right? Like, why do animals do that? Animals don't really have right or wrong, right? Animals typically do things because to survive. Survival is, so if it, why would an animal do something if it could potentially reduce its possibility to survive? So just to help somebody else. What they say is that it's for the good, it's not maybe for their own survival, but it's for the survival of the species, the survival of the gene. Okay? What they say about ants is that through some, you know, calculation, that is based on, you know, the queen and the queen has a lady. Basically, all ants are very close, all the ants in a colony are very closely related to each other. So in order to promote the survival of their species, of their genes, so they'll help each other. Right? And it's, again, this is explaining, you know, in evolutionary terms, you know, why an animal would develop such a thing. So it just, I don't know, it defies explanation to me.
The animal care about the survival of the species.
And this gene knows that gene, and it's just, I don't know. I mean, again, I'm reading it
probably
out of context.
That's how Shem created them. For example, they had fear, they'll run away from you. It's very interesting. Not talk about ants, talk about spiders. Someone told me they were very sad because they killed the spider. And I tried to control them, to know. So I talked to someone who was about spiders. He said, if a spider is a bad spider, so to speak, it could be black widow, of course, or could be brown. And a spider, that type of spider, won't run away from you. That spider stays there to challenge you, while other spiders who are so-called not dangerous spiders will run away from you. And it's interesting that ants, and it's really not dangerous, they shut me up. What do you call it? Termites. But they want survival. So that, and Hashem has created that instinct within species, and how they develop their own colony, like the queen and all that. That's interesting. But then you would think also these days, in English, they have a queen. And that is someone. And of course, they said for us that we could have a king, but it had to be a Jewish king over us, so you couldn't take someone who's not.
It could not be an ant.
Yeah. So that, it all ties in together when you really come back to think of it. It seems that.
Yep, there's a lot of uniformity in it.
But one thing, why do we begin with the races? Why don't we begin with, say, the giving of the Torah?
Well, the reason for that is because the racist sets the stage. You know, another aspect of this is that the whole story of racist sets the stage for the giving of the Torah. The giving of the Torah.
Yeah.
So what we've addressed until now is why the racist belongs in the Torah, right? Belongs where it is. So you can ask the other question if you ask. So that's because it gives the entire context. That if I just said, okay, I'm giving you the Torah, and I wouldn't have all the background of Hashem created the world, He created Adam, and then Eden, and Adam made the mistake that he did, and as we'll read, you know, humankind spiraled downward since then, and Abraham began a fight the tide and to try to bring the world back, and ultimately Hashem said, okay, you're the one, you're going to be the one that is going to do it, and I'm choosing you. And that's why we get the Torah. The Torah is the ultimate manifestation, expression of the covenant that Hashem formed with the Jewish people as a result of us being part of the family of Avraham and Yaakov that become the agents of Hashem in the world. So you wouldn't have. You need the context. The gracious provides the context for the giving of the Torah.
And also, my understanding is that the Torah was offered to all the nations, but he said, well, we still can't stop the nations, or whatever it is.
Yeah. There are different understandings of that.
And that was
literally when.
We'll do, and then we'll learn.
Right. So, probably not going to get there for a long time, but there are different explanations of that. It was, literally went to nations, or more figurative. Okay. With that, let's begin our study of the first prophet says, the race is Bar Elohim, Eis HaShemayim Ve'Eis HaAretz. In the beginning, Hashem created heaven and the earth. Right? That's what it says, right? Bereshis Bara Elohim. In it, Bereshis in the beginning. Bara Elohim. Hashem created. God created. Eis HaShemayim Ve'Eis HaAretz. The heaven and the earth. Okay? I don't know how everybody's Hebrew is. But that sounds pretty accurate, right? That's what we've heard in the past. Right? Then, in the beginning, Hashem created heaven and the earth. Sounds right? Read the English. That's not what it says. Okay? Let's look at the English. It says, in the beginning of God creating the heavens and the earth. And then it begins to tell the story. Okay? Not how he's hearing it, right? What I said was, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And that's what we're used to hearing. That's what the verb words seem to say. Our school here translates it as, a little differently, in the beginning of God creating the heavens and the earth, .. here is what the stage will look like when God created the heavens and the earth. So where is the English coming from? Well, Rashi, it's Arsko's policy to translate like Rashi, right? One of the part of the difficulty and the beauty of the Torah is that there are very many things that could fit into one pasuk, and it's very difficult to write a translation of the Torah, because when you write a translation of the Torah, you are perforce having to commit to somebody's explanation. There's no such thing as an objective translation of the Torah. So Arsko has, they write, just for consistency's sake, I mean, because Rashi is, perhaps the most basic and, pivotal commentary in the Torah, so they took Rashi's explanation. Now, what pushes Rashi to read the pasuk in a different way than we're familiar? So Rashi says, it's a long Rashi and it's a little complex, we don't have to read it inside. Rashi says it like this. The word, no Hebrew lesson, the Zikuk lesson, okay? The Rashi. So, what we translated that was, when we translated it, was in the beginning. In the beginning. Okay, beginning. Now, very simple. However, in Hebrew, typically, when you have a word that ends with a tuff like this, depending on the word, but you know, unless the tuff is part of the shoresh, part of the root, which here it's not, right? The word is rosh, that's the root. So when you have a word like this ending with a tuff, it's usually to connect it to the following word, and it's in place of the word of. So for example, that's a great example. Torah, so we have Torah, right? The Torah. And we have Torah Moshe. The Torah of Moshe, right? So we're adding a tuff in the end, usually replacing a head, right? So the Torah of Torah becomes the Torah of. Yirah Shemayim, right? Yirah is fear, oh, and Yirah Shemayim, very good, is fear of heaven. So Rashi says, okay, and Rashi doesn't really rely so much on the rule, although that's, you know, that's what we based on. Rashi says, just from a comparative standpoint of looking throughout Tanakh, says Rashi, the word racist in Tanakh never means the beginning. It means the beginning of, right? Kadosh, I think, is the word I think it says in the Navi. Kadosh Yisrael Hashem, that's something like that, that these people are Kadosh Hashem, racist to Ruach. So they are the first of, so to speak, the first of his crop. Racist Goyim Amalek, Torah says, or Bilam says, right, that Amalek was the first of the nation. Okay, so racist always means the beginning of. So Rashi.
Could the reason to this mind buffer, since Hashem created the heavens and earth, when I say the heavens, does that confer that there are other worlds also in the heavens besides what we know of, the earth, for example, and the planets and all?
Because Shemayim is plural. Perhaps. We will, perhaps, hopefully we'll get to that. Yeah, on a deeper level, we could, yeah. Perhaps. Yeah.
Before there was no beginning, then Hashem was there, but he did not create anything before that.
Yeah, and no, it's a philosophical conundrum a little bit, because before the world there's no time, right? But yeah, so that's the part that I'll tell us not to worry about. What's that?
It's too confusing.
Yeah, basically Chazal say, you know, don't think about what was before, don't think about what's going to be after. You know, it's beyond our
someday maybe we will know.
Yeah, I mean they do, they say, you know, there are Kabbalistic teachings that you have to learn, you know, in private, you know, one-on-one, or whatever. But it's, it says Rashi, gracious cannot mean in the beginning. It has to mean in the beginning of. And therefore, he says, the pasuk is not a statement of chronology. It is not saying, in the beginning, God created the world, that was first, and then second, you know, it comes over. Rather, you read it with the second, with the next pasuk, that in the beginning of God creating of the world, the world was empty and full of confusion, and it was dark, etc. The Torah really, you read the first two sitting together, that in the beginning of God's creation of the world, the world was dark and empty and distant. Now, on the one hand, you know, okay, a very nice technical Dick's grammar lesson that Rashi is giving us. But on the other hand, it's very striking. There's something very significant that comes out of these Rashi. Which is, and perhaps we're going to refer to also, is that if you read the book in like Rashi, the Torah never told us that God created heaven and earth. Never said that. It's implied, right? Because if you want to talk about the beginning of when was God was creating heaven and earth, that means God created heaven and earth, right? But it never actually directly said God created heaven and earth. It says, in the beginning of when God did it, right? It never says God did it. It says, in the beginning of that period of time, here's what happened. But it never literally, directly says, God created the heavens and the earth. The way we read it, simply, is, creation, borrow, turn, and turn, right? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, right? Very important, right? That's the beginning of everything. The way Rashi reads it, it's implicit. It's perhaps even explicit, right? But it's not as direct. It's just right.
Who did it?
Okay, what's that?
Who did it? Who did?
Okay, yeah, it's clear he did.
Yeah.
If you're going to talk about the beginning of when he did it, it means he did it, right? It's just what's striking is just the fact that it's missing those words. It's missing, you know. Let us say, Rashi would want to say, to read it, the Rishona. Okay? And then instead of the Rashi, it's Rishona in the beginning. Okay? That's exactly what the beginning would mean. Rishona in the beginning. That's what the Rashi is to be in the beginning of. So everything else, right? It says God created the light, and God created the plants, and the sun, and the moon, and everything. It never says the words, God created heaven and earth. Again, it tells us that he created it it says it explicitly but in a roundabout way. Which is striking. It's just something to think about. Mm-hmm. And to go a step further, even if you read it the first way, the simple way, at the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and it's direct, it's still told to us in a fundamentally different way than the entire remainder of creation. How's that? The entire remainder of creation started from light. Okay? Pasuk Gimel. God said, let there be light. Pasuk Vav. Next page. God said, let there be a firmament. Okay, you know, we'll hopefully talk about the Rishia once. What a firmament. Hashem said, let the waters gather. Let there be light, God said. God said. The whole rest of it. Right? Well, it does not say Vayomer Elokim Yehi Shemayim V'Aretz. That God said, let there be heaven and earth. God said, and God created heaven and earth. Right? Even if you read the other way, and by the way, Rashi is not, Rashi's explanation is not the only one. The Ramban argues, and he actually says, you do find racist meaning in the beginning. And he says, racist does mean in the beginning. Like we're used to hearing, and in the beginning, God doesn't have it there. So fine. Read it that way. But no matter how you read it, it still doesn't say, and God said. It's still telling us in a fundamentally different way than the rest of creation. And that is because the original creation was fundamentally different than the creation. And in order that you come back next week, I will leave it as a cliffhanger. No, hopefully I can.